The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, welcome to the Big Blue Big Board podcast. I am Dan Pizzuta, joined here by Chris Flum. Chris, how you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You know, once again, we have a guest, and I think this is going to be a pretty cool one for people.
Yeah, I think it is. For some longtime Big Blue View readers, you will know our guest. Most of you will know him as Invictus. Kunal, welcome to the show.
Pleasure being here, guys. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's good to be talking to you again. Well, we talk all the time, but in an official capacity.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So the three of us today are going to dive into some draft things. That's what we do on this draft podcast. More specifically, we are going to talk about some players we like a little more than the just general consensus, and a couple players we like less than the general consensus. We've kind of just been, you know, diving into a lot of what's going on at these positions, and so we just want to take a step back right now and kind of get a feel for guys we like. I'm sure some of you guys, just by listening to Chris and myself over the past, like 6 months, we've been talking about draft prospects at this point, you probably know some of the guys we like. I would just let you know, Ben Benogu is not going to be a guy I like. You guys already know that if you've listened long enough. So we're going to try to just change it up a little bit. So we're going to start off with guys that we like more than the consensus. And Chris, why don't you start us off with your first guy?
Sure. You know, I was thinking about this. I decided to go for a little bit of a deep cut for these because we've talked a ton about Brian Burns and Montez Sweat and the recently confirmed most freakishly athletic off-ball nose tackle in the world, Ed Oliver. So I thought I'd go down the draft chart a little bit and go with Tyree St. Louis, offensive tackle out of Miami. Yeah, I know a lot of people kind of get the heebie-jeebies now when you talk about an offensive tackle from the U, but Tyree St. Louis is not Eric Flowers.
Yeah, so having been a Miami fan myself, Tyree St. Louis, completely different from Eric Flowers. I think, you know, when we talk about Flowers, the big thing that, you know, we really were concerned with and what ultimately was his downfall were his hands. And, you know, St. Louis, he looks the part, right? He's got long arms. He has great foot speed, which is something also very different. You know, when we talk about Eric Flowers, you know, speed rushes, and this is an understatement, were a struggle for him, pretty much because he couldn't punch and he didn't have the foot quickness. St. Louis, completely different. That's not to say that, you know, he's a first round pick or anything like that, but, you know, he isn't a finished product, but he has potential. And, you know, when we're talking about guys in the mid rounds, I think you could do a lot worse than him.
Yeah. And also, one of the things I like about him is that he has played both left and right tackle. So he could conceivably compete for right tackle right away, especially if they don't find anyone better between now and, I'll say, the fourth round. And maybe if he develops, he could give the Giants an option to move on from Nate Solder after the 2020 season when he has an out in his contract. But like you said, great foot quickness, good hands, long arms. He's got the size, roughly 6'5", 315 or so. At least that's what he was listed at. I don't believe he was invited to the combine, which is a shame.
No, he wasn't. And that makes him kind of a bit of a mystery we don't really get to see in athletic profile. As I'm looking, he's not even listed from a pro day. I don't know if Miami had their pro day or not yet, but he's not even like in the Spark database right now among like 140 offensive linemen that are listed. So yeah, it's a bit of a deep dive there, but he is someone who has shown some ability at a pretty high level. I mean, you know, Miami does give you, you know, some of the shade of Eric Flowers, but you scout the player and not the uniform, and not all players at the same position from the same school are the same. That's a very flawed way of thinking about things, although it's a very popular way sometimes to think about things. Yeah, he could be an option because that could be where the Giants are looking at tackle, especially when you look at if they're going to go heavy on defense in the first round, they might be waiting later in the draft to try to get one of those developmental tackle prospects. So we'll see. Kunal, why don't we go with your first guy who you like a little more than maybe everyone else?
So, you know, we've heard from everybody that Dave Gettleman is going to pick a pass rusher at some point in the first round, whether that be 6 or 17. I'm going to talk about the guy that I have near the top of my list in terms of pass rushing prospects, and that's Clelin Ferrell. I don't feel like, you know, he kind of gets his due. We talk about Brian Burns, Josh Allen, Nick Bosa, Montez Sweat, but Ferrell kind of gets, you know, pushed to the back, and he's somebody who I think would be really, really intriguing for us. Not only does he have, you know, the great length, right? His arms are over 34 inches, but he was one of the most productive pass rushers, you know, in the country. He was everywhere for the Clemson Tigers. And one of the big things, and I think one of the traits that you really can't teach is just is snap explosion. When you see this guy, he's consistently the first person off the ball. And that's talking about a Clemson lineup that was pretty much an all-star defensive line. He was consistently off the ball. He really, really good at defending the run and setting the edge. And, you know, that makes him one of the most balanced prospects in the draft. You know, I know there's concerns with other players such as, you know, Brian Burns in terms of how they're going to do in run defense. You're not going to get that with Ferrell. A lot of people will say, you know, he's probably better at 4-3 defensive end. My thing is, you know, James Betcher runs a multiple look defense, right? We don't really talk about 4-3 DEs or 3-4 OLBs. We just talk about edge guys now. Yes, Ferrell will struggle a little bit backpedaling, but you're not drafting him to backpedal. You're drafting him to rush the passer, and I think he's somebody who's really, really, you know, a good option, you know, in the first round that can do that for us.
Yeah, I really like Ferrell too. And this is completely by coincidence, but my profile on Ferrell will be going up, well, tomorrow as we record, today as it gets posted, as this podcast gets posted. So
there we go.
Yeah, I've been actually watching a lot of film on him recently. And to me, what stands out is his hands. You mentioned he's got his arms are longer than my legs, and he knows how to use them. Like, he always extends, he creates space for himself, and his hand usage is just great. Offensive linemen just cannot lock into him. They can't lock in, they can't control him, and then it's just either a long arm or a quick rip move, and he's past them.
Yeah, and to Kunal's point about like the 3-4 and 4-3, and I agree that it's not really a thing anymore that anyone really needs to worry about, because there's so much nickel in the NFL right now. That is the base. That is base. Teams are playing nickel. But Ferrell has a little more experience standing up than I think a lot of people get him credit for. I'm looking at the SIS rookie handbook right now, which we've talked about with Matt Manicharian on a former podcast. Again, if you have not gotten this book, definitely check it out. But they list Ferrell having only being lined up in a three-point stance 75.4% of the time. So almost a quarter of the time, he was standing up. He only rushed 84% of the time of pass snaps. So he did drop back a little bit. So he has a lot more of that. He has a lot more experience there than I think a lot of people do give him credit for. And so the scheme fit thing doesn't really fit for me. I'm looking at the big board I've kind of been slightly putting together. I have him 18th, and I think that might be high for some people. When people are talking about what the Giants are going to do at 17, I know mostly they're talking about edge at 6, so they don't talk about it as much at 17, but he could absolutely be option there. And looking at the pressure rate, he was fourth in the draft class in pressure rate. So he was consistently getting to the quarterback. He had 23 run stuffs, which was big, four pass breakups too. So he was, like you said, just all over the place.
He does everything. Absolutely.
All right, so I'm going to jump into my first guy that I like a little more than consensus, and that is Emmanuel Hall, who is a wide receiver from Missouri. If you read my target yards added piece, and I'll just give a quick rundown on that, it's a metric I've put together every year, just basically taking a wide receiver and splitting what he averages in yards per target when he's thrown at and what his quarterback averages in yards per attempt when he throws to literally anyone else. Emmanuel Hall first in that metric this year by a wide margin, 7.43 target yards added, which means Drew Lock averaged 7.43 more yards when throwing to Emmanuel Hall than anyone else on the Missouri offense.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
Pretty good. And, you know, that takes into account some running backs where yards per target isn't very high, but that is easily the top mark in this draft class. And then when you look at him, you would kind of think of that he's his deep threat and he is quick, but per SIS, only 44.3% of his routes went further than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage, which is one of the lowest rates in this draft class. So he's able to win in the intermediate range and then make big gains, but also win deep. His 3.9 yards per route run is second in this draft class behind Andy Isabella, who's also looks very favorably by target yards added. He's just a guy, there are some injury concerns. He did miss some time. He only had 58 targets this year with Missouri because there was some injuries, but I just think the upside is there. He's like a borderline top 32 pick for me, and he is just, he's not there, I think, in a lot of other people's minds.
No, I've seen a lot of people, you know, question his hands, which, yeah, there are drops, but also kind of use him as a reason why Drew Lock didn't take the step forward that he might have. But yeah, he does jump out on tape, and especially for the Giants, they need somebody who can threaten a defense deep, especially if they're just not going to let Evan Engram run the seam at all again.
So to Chris's point, you know, I guess I was forced to watch a lot more Drew Lock than I initially had wanted to. But when you watch him, and I think you guys can attest to this, a lot of his throws were off balance, off his back foot. And so the accuracy was, you know, not the best. But you see Emmanuel Hall. And one of the things that you really look for is just the savviness that he has to adjust mid-route and to catch some of these balls. Because, you know, there were times that I saw Drew Lock throw the ball, you know, kind of away from where the Emmanuel Hall had run, and he was able to adjust on the fly. And that is a phenomenal trait. And like you guys said, we need some deep speed. We lost the only deep speed on the roster because we're not using Evan Engram that way. He would be a great fit just because, you know, we need the deep speed that we just recently lost and we're not going to talk about.
No.
So I tweeted this out the other day. So there are three wide receivers in this draft class who were above the class averages in target yards added, positive play percentage against man coverage, and positive play percentage against zone coverage. And those positive play percentages are per SIS. The three wide receivers are all guys that I do like a lot. Emmanuel Hall, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside of Stanford, and Gary Jennings of West Virginia. So that's it. There's three guys above average in all three of those statistics. So I like Hall a lot. He would give the Giants something they don't have, whether that's something they want right now. We don't totally know because it looks like they're setting up for this yards after the catch offense. But also only, again, 44.3% of his routes went more than 15 yards. So he does have that ability to win in the short and intermediate areas. All right, so we're going to do two guys that we like each. So Chris, let's go back up to you and your second guy.
Yeah, I'm going to stay at wide receiver, sort of, and go with a player who just intrigues the hell out of me in Jalen Hurd, wide receiver out of Baylor, also running back out of Tennessee. And that's what intrigues me about him. He's listed at 6'4 or 6'5 and about 225, 230. So he was a big running back coming out of Tennessee. But then he transferred over to Baylor and transitioned to wide receiver. He only has 1 year of experience at wideout, but he looks comfortable in it. Especially for a Baylor wide receiver, he's already a good route runner. He shows solid hands catching the ball and tracking it and making adjustments. He's got speed, he's got size, and Baylor still used him as a running back on occasion, especially in short yardage situations. So I think that's a player that a fairly inventive coach, a coach who likes to move players around, could have some fun with.
Absolutely. I think just the fact that he has experience of both running back and wide receiver, you know, as Dan said, we're going to be an offense that is predicated on yards after the catch, short, shifty routes. You know, I don't know where you guys have him, but late day two, early day three, I'd be comfortable.
I'm not hearing a whole lot about him from anyone, so I'm guessing maybe day three.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, which they've got a lot of picks.
they do, absolutely.
Yeah, that seems to be his range. It looks like he's, you know, still learning the nuances of wide receiver, but of course he only has that one season there. But you can see some of the things that have translated from running back. He, per Sports Info Solutions, he ran 48.3% of his routes deep. He had 9 unique routes, and that's what SIS tracks of the amount of routes that are at least take up 5%. Of a receiver's route tree. And 9 is super high. That's like the highest of any of these wide receivers. So you usually historically think of Baylor guys who are, you know, on the outside running goes like the whole time. That was not Jalen Hurd. He was in the slot 86.7% of the time. So he does have a little bit of outside, but mostly in the slot. And when you look at the way he beats man coverage, 60.7% positive play percentage against man. So that's really good. He's able to beat man. I think he needs some of those nuances, and you see that in his zone coverage, just a 48.6% positive play percentage against zone coverage, which well below average. So you think of some of those option routes and things he can possibly learn, especially coming out of the slot at the next level. But there's development that is on the horizon. You can see what a developed version of Jalen Hurd looks like. And a lot of receivers, you know, that are going to be in that area, you can't see that. You think maybe that could happen, but I think there is a very clear path to Jalen Hurd becoming a better wide receiver.
You know, you look at the fact that he had positive grades against man, despite the fact that he is playing in the slot as a 6'4", almost 230-pound wide receiver, you know, and that tells you that, you know, there's something there. There's something that you can work with for sure. That's impressive.
Yeah, and I'll say I'm just looking at his spider chart right now, and he has some interesting comps. Got Equanimeous St. Brown and Alan Lazard from the 2018 draft, Kenny Golladay from 2017, Jordan Matthews from 2014, old friend Jeremy Davis from 2015, Kinsey Anunua from 2014, and Cody Latimer. So he's got an intriguing build to him that a lot of receivers who might not be top receivers, but a lot who have at least had some success.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kunal, why don't we go to your second guy?
So I'm going to stick around, you know, our number 17 pick, and I'm going to stay with the Lions. And This time I'm going to select Washington State offensive tackle Andre Dillard. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, potential offensive linemen to kind of round out the offensive line. Dillard kind of, you know, spent some time under the radar. I have him as my number two offensive tackle behind only Jonah Williams. And I think if you're looking for somebody to keep Eli or whoever our quarterback is upright, you can't go wrong with Dillard. I think he's the best pass protection offensive tackle in this draft, bar none. If you can't watch a whole lot of, Washington State games, just take a look at his movement when it comes to the combine. You know, his footwork was special, and his footwork is special. And one of the things that you look at when you look at an offensive tackle, you look at athleticism, you look at their ability to play in space, and you look at both their footwork and their punch. Can they recover from a speed rush? Can they drive a defender off the ball? I would say the only weakness that I see in Dillard's game is, you know, if you're really, really pushing that hog molly, you know, philosophy, he won't drive somebody off the ball, but he is a very effective seal blocker in a zone scheme, which we do run quite a bit. You know, I think that this is a guy that could step in day one, start at right tackle, and eventually take over for Nate Soldier and be one of the best pass protection tackles. I compare him to Teron Armstead. That's who he kind of really reminds me of.
Which is high praise.
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah. But I'm a believer.
Yeah, I'll say he's, especially his combine, made a believer out of me. I was a little leery of him just watching his tape at Washington State because he never really showed a real kick slide. He always just kind of used this kind of diagonal shuffle that looked really awkward, and I just wasn't sure how he was going to deal with just NFL pass rushers. But then at the combine, they put him in the kick slide drill, and he did it almost flawlessly. He kept his hips pretty much parallel to the imaginary line of scrimmage. He ran the rabbit right by. That just cleared up that question for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, Dillard might be right now my OT1.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of his. So we're talking about the combine. You guys are talking about some of the drills he did, but the athletic testing was incredible. He's first among this entire offensive line class in Spark, which again is a composite score of all the testing. It's in the 97th percentile of NFL offensive linemen. That is very good. And then you look at some of his production on the field and some of his metrics. The SIS charted him with a 0.44% blown block rate against the pass. That is easily the best in this draft class. He had a 1.12 blown block rate against the run, which is about average, but I honestly don't care about your run blocking. If you can pass block well, you can figure out how to eventually run block well. That's kind of my philosophy on offensive linemen. You can have maybe some hesitation with the Washington State offense because it was very quick, so he wasn't holding blocks for an extended period of time, but if you were projecting him into the Giants offense, they're not holding blocks for a very long period of time either. They want to get the ball out with the current quarterback they have and with the current wide receivers they have too. It's going to be a very quick strike offense. So between Dillard's athleticism, his ability to pass block, I think he's going to be a fine run blocker at the next level. I'm very high on him, and I would, if he's available at 17, which he might not be, he would probably be my ideal pick right now if we're taking quarterback out of the equation, which, you know, we probably are. But with quarterback, that's going to be my second guy here. And it's not a guy that's brought up in the first round conversation a lot. And I think he should, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if this draft class is any good. I really don't think so. I like Kyler Murray a lot. I have mixed feelings on literally everyone else except Daniel Jones. I don't like Daniel Jones. but so my guy is Will Grier of West Virginia. And a lot of that has to do with how accurate he is. My philosophy right now on quarterbacks is you can't teach accuracy. SIS only has on-target percentage for quarterbacks going back to, I think, the 2016 season in college. So there's really only two draft classes that show up. But when you look at what some of the highly drafted quarterbacks had in on-target percentage in their last college season and their first NFL season, none of them had a higher percentage, and only, I think, two came within 1% of their college on-target percentage, and one of those was DeShone Kizer, who had the lowest on-target percentage of all of those guys, so that's not really helping there. But Greer is just, he's accurate to all parts of the field. He's deadly accurate from like 1 to 10. He's good in the intermediate. He has a really good deep ball. He doesn't, not always the guy that is shown with arm strength, but he's accurate on those deep balls, and he can get it. Overall, he has the highest on-target percentage of this quarterback class. He had a great production. It was in the Big 12, which you have to account for that a little bit. He wasn't facing great pass defenses. I think his biggest issue is he tries to force things sometimes when they're not there. He'll try to scramble out of the pocket like he's Kyler Murray, and that can run him into problems because he's not Kyler Murray on those throws. But you know, when you look at how far down the field he threw and he was still accurate, you know, Josh Hermsmeyer of 538 did a projection system that bases completion percentage on depth of target, and Will Greer was second in this class behind Murray. The two, my surprise, Football Outsiders just came out with Cubase, and Greer was the lowest of like quarterbacks who were viewed to be in the top 100, which kind of surprised me, but they don't take accuracy into account, which I think now that we have those numbers and we can use that, I think that should become a bigger part of a quarterback evaluation. It's become a bigger part of my quarterback evaluation. So I don't think I'm going to like stand here and say he should be the Giants pick at like 17, but I think he's easily QB3 for me, maybe QB like 2.5, getting closer to Haskins than I think I would have thought earlier in this process.
Wow. That's big.
Yeah, and that's just kind of how I'm viewing quarterbacks right now, especially since I don't like any of the other guys. I think they're too inconsistent, and the play just varies way too much for me.
Yeah, that might be kind of a commentary on the rest of the non-Kyler Murray class, and to a lesser extent, non-Dwayne Haskins. But yeah, accuracy definitely does translate. And at least for inconsistencies, I would rather have my quarterback be inconsistent because he is being aggressive as opposed to be inconsistent because his mechanics are just funky and he can never get his feet and upper body pointing in the same direction.
Everything comes with context. And so with Greer, I'm not so sure that his offensive line, you know, outside of a few players was all that great. And in the games that I had charted from him, he was under a lot of duress, but you know, like you guys said, he made the throws that he needed to make, and he was accurate when he needed to make them.
Yeah, part of why I think even just viewing him as QB3 makes him higher on my board than most people. And it's just, yeah, it's part of how I'm viewing quarterbacks right now and how looking at my evaluations in the past and trying to figure out how that projects going forward, I would much rather have a quarterback who I could probably, you know, rein in by saying, hey, maybe don't do that anymore. Like, it's okay to throw that ball away than trying to fix someone who's going to miss an open guy. I'd much rather have the guy where I'm just trying to rein him in a little bit. And if I'm a good coach, I'm working on getting those receivers open and not having my quarterback under duress so he can have those open throws. You know, this is some of the same things people said about Patrick Mahomes. He's going to have to get reined in. But I'm not saying Will Greer's Patrick Mahomes, but I'm saying he was put in an offense that was just wide open throws all the time, and he was able to throw them accurately. And you know, Mahomes had the highest on-target percentage of the quarterbacks I looked at over the past couple draft classes. So that's just kind of where I come down here. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then come back with some guys we like a little less than the overall consensus.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Okay, so let's dive into guys we like a little less. And Chris, why don't we start with you again with your first guy?
Yeah, on this one, I decided to take the easy way out. Well, not the easiest way out, but easier than the deep cuts in the first part. And I decided to go with Greg Little, the left tackle out of Ole Miss. He's a player, to me, he passes the eye test, but doesn't do all that well when it comes to the essay part of the test. He's got everything you look for in an offensive tackle. He's got the size. He's got long arms. He's just a first off the bus type guy. But get him on the field, and it just starts to break down. He doesn't have the feet you would hope to see. His movement skills are meh at best. And I have, at least for a while, I was seeing him kind of reckoned as one of the top tackles in the class, and I just couldn't go there with him.
I agree with you. I think there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of rawness that makes me a little scared, and it was for all the reasons you said. And you know, it's, I don't want to say I get Eric Flowers vibes from him, because I would never want to put that on an offensive tackle prospect. But you know, the amount of work that he has to do in order to realize what I think is an enormous talent, you know, is a lot. And it's something that, you know, I think he can be successful if he's with the right offensive line coach and if he's in the right scheme. But, you know, that's somebody that I wouldn't take, you know, on day one or early day two.
Maybe if he happens to slip and lands with Dante Scarnecchia, he'll be a perennial All-Pro.
Right. Tom Cable, maybe not so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. So in the SIS Rookie Handbook, they have Little graded as their number one offensive tackle. But if you look at blown block metrics, he's just about average against the pass and against the run. So I think it's a little more trait-based there than production-based. And then you look at what he did at the combine. I mean, he was in the 31st percentile among NFL tackles in Spark. And that's not a disqualifier at all. You can still be productive being that low until you get like into like below the 10th percentile is where you should really worry. But if you're looking at a guy who's, you know, not super athletic and some of the production wasn't there either, you can see how maybe there is a path for him definitely not being as good as some expect him to be. And so with that, Kunal, why don't we go to the first guy that you like maybe a little less than the consensus?
So unlike Chris, I'm not going to take the easy way out, and I might annoy a few people here with my pick, but I'm going to actually go with Josh Allen. You know, the guy you know, the guy that we would that a lot of people would be drooling over at number six. A lot of people have penciled into the New York Jets. I think he's a little overrated, and the reason why I think so is watching him. You know, I still have him as a projected top 10 pick. You know, I think he has a lot of phenomenal traits, but you know, there are things that you know, give you pause. For example, he was very productive, very, very productive. I think he had something like 14 sacks. However, his stats aren't the be all end all, right? Josh Allen is more raw than I think a lot of people let on. He does not have a move after if his first move is sealed off. He needs to work on his counters, and if he doesn't, he's going to struggle. A lot of where people really like Josh Allen is his ability to go into coverage. And I agree. He is great at backpedaling, you know, dropping into zones and, you know, even decent at covering tight ends in man coverage. However, again, if you are going to draft him top five, top six, you are not drafting him for his ability to backpedal and cover. You're drafting him to get after the quarterback. A lot of his production was either against tight ends or unblocked. And so he has great bend, but he hasn't used it consistently. He does not have a consistent pass rush repertoire, which I think I would need to see. He's somebody that I would really kind of compare to like an Anthony Barr, for example, rather than a Von Miller or a Myles Garrett. You know, I would draft a Von Miller or Myles Garrett at number three. I'm not so sure I would draft Anthony Barr at number three.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And yeah, you do see that rawness, but I would counter that by saying that he has shown the work ethic to at least to try to improve on his faults. He got better from his sophomore through his senior season. So I could see a team drafting him and hoping for an immediate spark and then he improve and work on those flaws.
Oh, I definitely agree with, I definitely agree there. Like I said, I still think he's a top 10 guy and I think, you know, he deserves to be a top 10 guy. I just don't think you can come in and expect him to, you know, get double-digit sacks automatically in his rookie season the way, you know, even Bradley Chubb was able to do this year.
I can see the point, yeah. So he only lined up in a three-point stance 3.7% of the time. I think that's probably a little overblown. Lining up in a three-point stance and rushing off the edge as a down lineman, I think, is kind of like playing under center for a quarterback. I think a lot of people make a big deal if you haven't done it. I don't think it's a particularly hard skill to learn if you have to. But again, he only rushed the passer about 60% of the time. He played that outside linebacker role in Kentucky, kind of the same that Lorenzo Carter played with Georgia. And it's something you would like to see him rush the passer a little more. You know, Lorenzo Carter needed to develop more. I think Josh Allen is a little more athletic, has a little more pass rush ability than Lorenzo Carter did coming in. But I can see the point. And if you wanted to, you know, bump someone up, you know, like a Montez Sweat or someone who does have just more, you know, pass rush, you know, experience and down to down ability, I could see that. And so going into the pass rush, it's one of the reasons I am not high on the first guy here, and that's Dexter Lawrence, the interior defensive lineman from Clemson. There's mixed bags on him. Some people think he's one of the better defensive linemen in this class. He's basically a 340, 350-pound nose tackle. And just the way I view the NFL right now, being a great run defender isn't all that valuable if you don't have a little bit more pass rushing ability than Lawrence has. If he's going to go maybe the end of round one, like top of round two, that's a lot to give up on someone whose only job is to just take up space and defend the run. Like I think you almost have to be like Damon Harrison level good against the run if you're going to have that value there. And he showed a little bit of pass rush ability at Clemson, but mostly it was just because he is a gigantic human being and he was able to kind of push forward. He has to be, I think, a little more refined to be able to get that to work in the NFL. So it just in the sense of him not really bringing, and I think it's just a positional value thing. I'm just not going to value a nose tackle highly to where Lawrence is going to go if there's not the desired amount of pass rush ability. I think there's a lot of other defensive tackles that you can play around that same area who are going to have that pass rush ability, and that's even past like the Ed Olivers and Quinnen Williams. Like if you look at someone like Jerry Tillery, who might go around where Lawrence is. Tillery is probably just as good against the run, and he's a really good pass rusher. I'd much rather have someone like that. So that's just, I think, just kind of a positional value preference for me of why I'm not going to view Lawrence where I think a lot of other people are.
That's fair. Although, you know, we know what Dave Gettleman thinks of your whole positional value argument. It is a crock. But that's fair. I do think maybe he could become a better pass rusher. Maybe definitely not at the ability of Quinnen Williams or Ed Oliver or even Jerry Tillery or Christian Wilkins or Jeffrey Simmons as soon as he's healed up. And damn, this is a good front seven class.
Yeah, but to my point, like think of all the guys you just listed and where Lawrence might go among them.
Exactly. So that is a really strong argument against him, or at least why he should slide down a little bit and not to spend a high draft pick on him. he does have just a freakish amount of athleticism for a guy his size. Running a 5 second 40 at 340 pounds is just stupid. And he does have better lateral agility, I think, than he has any right to. Again, not absolutely phenomenal, but within the context of being a 340 pound human being, he moves better than he really should be able to. But he definitely needs to learn how to use that and become a pass rusher and not just a big athletic human.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything that you guys said, and I kind of have the same view of Lawrence. You know, he's right now, he's a really big athletic person that takes up space. However, you know, you're going to need a little bit more than that in order to be, you know, a top 50 pick. You know, you have to be able to show some juice in the pass game. You know, if he was able to consistently, you know, at least just collapse the pocket from the inside, he would be a top 32 pick. But that's the thing. He's not consistent. And you know, I know I talked about this with Farrell, but Lawrence was in, you know, a defensive line full of all-stars. And sometimes, you know, while that can be great, it can also kind of color evaluation of players as well. And it makes the evaluation a little bit difficult. Hey, is this because they're great or are they succeeding because of the players around them? And I think for Lawrence, I think in all these mocks and all these big boards, he's very high in part, I think, because of his partner in crime, Christian Wilkins, a little.
Yeah. Wilkins is just a fun player to watch just as a classic three technique.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Chris, why don't we go over to your second guy?
Okay. Mine is going to be another one who might be a little bit, maybe a little bit controversial, and that is Greedy Williams, the cornerback out of LSU. And again, he passes the eye test with flying colors. Maybe you might want him to have a little bit more bulk and thickness, but he's got the length, he's got speed for days. And, you know, as we were talking about before we went on the air, if you get him in the right situations, he deserves to be mentioned as one of the top corners in this draft. I think it would be scheme and preference basically between him and Byron Murphy out in Washington. But getting him out of those situations, or when he has to do something other than what he is best at, his footwork is just a little too inconsistent for me. He can get off balance. He sometimes looks a little bit tight, and it's just a little bit too much for me to have him as just unequivocally my top guy there.
That's, you know, that's fair. I am going to respectfully disagree. I actually have Greedy Williams as my top guy, but I will say you're absolutely right. I think it is a matter of preference in terms of, you know, what scheme you run. But if you run, you know, primarily man and you do a lot of press bail, I think he has the potential to be one of the top cover guys in the league after a few years. I compare him to Stephon Gilmore. I think they are very similar players. And while I do agree that, you know, sometimes he's a little tight, sometimes his footwork is a little wonky, I think his recovery on players is phenomenal. Watch him against DK Metcalf, who a lot of people have as their top wide receiver and showed out as like a freak at the combine. And Greedy was able to match up with him step for step. That was really the game that kind of sold me on him as my top guy. Even with, you know, more slippery players like Riley Ridley, he was able to stay on them. I think as a boundary corner, you could do a lot worse than him.
Yeah, I think maybe at the high end, he could. You said Stephon Gilmore. DRC, Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, with again that similar kind of press bail using length and recovery to kind of close those gaps and just close the door on passes. If he could get into a situation and develop to be that kind of player, absolutely.
All right, Janelle, why don't we get into your second guy who you might like a little less than consensus?
So I guess I'm going to be talking about offensive tackles today. But, you know, the guy that I like a little bit less than other people, but again, I have him as, you know, a top 15, top 20 guy is Juwan Taylor. a lot of people have him as their top offensive tackle. I have him number three behind Andre Dillard, who I talked about, and Jonah Williams. I think, you know, when you look at him, he looks like he's an all-pro offensive tackle right off the bat. He's got, you know, prototype size. He has impressive foot speed for somebody his size. What scares me is he still doesn't play with leverage all that well, and his punch still gives me pause. And my God, I guess it's a problem when I talk about Ereck Flowers this much, Ereck Flowers, the one thing he taught me about prospect evaluation when it comes to offensive linemen, you know, hands are important. I used to think it was all about footwork, but hands are just as important. And Juwan Taylor, if he gets his hands on you, it's over, but he has to get his hands on you. And you know, his punch is kind of all over the place. I see him punching too high. I can see players kind of bend around him quite a bit. Watch him against Kentucky. And if you put that on, there's plenty of evidence that he's a top five, top 10 pick. Not to say that he can't improve, but, you know, again, it's something that gives you pause before saying this guy is going to be, you know, the next Tyron Smith or whoever it is you want to compare him to.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I do like Juwan Taylor. You mentioned his foot speed. I can't remember if it was that game against Kentucky or the one against Mississippi State. The defense runs kind of a delayed blitz to his side, and he just passes off his guy and recovers and gets out to pick up the blitz. Just it was a wow play for me. So you can see those flashes of upside.
Yes.
But like you said, he just needs to get more consistent and just get better at using those tools on a play-in, play-out basis, which that could be why it took him until just this year to really emerge, and maybe he's starting to get it. We don't know yet.
Yeah, so this is interesting because per the SIS blown block rate, he has a 0.87% blown block rate against the pass, which is the fourth best in this class, a 0.23 blown block rate against the run, which is the best in this class.
Wow.
So it might not always be super pretty, but he did get the job done at Florida last year. He's probably my tackle two behind Dillard. So I could see where sometimes it doesn't look great, but I think there's enough there to get going.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Like I said, you know, he's a surefire first round pick, surefire top 20 pick. I just don't think he's the stone cold lead pipe lock all pro offensive tackle that a lot of people are saying. But I think I definitely agree. He'll probably be quite successful wherever he goes.
All right, so I am going to end this segment with my last guy, and that is a Riley Ridley, the wide receiver from Georgia. I think there is a mixed bag here on how people do view Ridley. I think early in the process, some people had him as like a top five wide receiver. I think that's fallen back a little bit, but I am super low on him, and I'm not even sure where he ranks in my wide receivers, but it's very low because he came in at a negative target yards added, which means when Georgia was throwing to Riley, they averaged less yards per target than when they threw to anyone else. That is not a good sign for a wide receiver at the NFL level. Among the wide receivers I have in charting since I've started target yards added, so heading into this class, I have 167 wide receivers in this group, and 18 of them came in at negative target yards added. And I'll say maybe, as I'm looking at the list, two of them maybe have been decent pro players. One is Ty Montgomery, who became a running back, and that's how he became a successful NFL player. So that's one, not a good sign. And then number two is Dante Pettis, who was a rookie last year. He was good when he was on the field, but also got injured. So he's still going to wait and see. There's a lot of other names of guys some people like. There's Jalen Sanders, like Alan Lazard from last year. You know, Stacey Coley, Kenny Lawler, Artavia Scott, Travon Darrell. There's just a lot of names of guys who were just were not very good and were mostly low picks in the draft and did not end up playing well in the NFL. Pettis is really the only guy in that group who got drafted highly. I'm not sure where Ridley is going to go. You know, he has those traits, but the production is not there. And that's a huge red flag for me. I found just in this group, since doing target yards added, anyone who is at negative target yards added, when a college offense was less productive throwing to you than anyone else on the field, that just doesn't bode well for NFL success.
So I agree. I'm actually a little bit more down on Ridley than the others that see him as, you know, I've heard people go as high as, you know, early day two or somebody that could be an option for the Giants at number 37. I think that's way too high. When I saw him, I was reminded of Mohamed Sanu. I think he's a dead ringer for the way that Sanu plays. And that's you know, somebody who has a ceiling as a number two wide receiver. One thing I will say is, you know, he's got phenomenal hands and he has phenomenal body control. He's a decent route runner, but he just doesn't have the quickness. You know, obviously the long speed is not there. He had a 4.58 40, not too much explosion, 7.23 cone, which is you know, kind of awful. 4.28 shuttle, which I think Ed Oliver beat that. You know, so you know, he doesn't have the short area quickness. He doesn't have the long speed to really be, you know, an amazing number one. I do think he can make some hay as a number two wide receiver. But I think this is a good pick as far as, you know, a player that's been getting a lot of hype, but maybe he needs to be knocked down a little.
And I would say, especially with this draft class, just with this wide receiver class being the way it is, where yeah, everywhere you turn, there's another wideout who is just like, oh, this guy could be good. This guy could be good. This guy could be good. You have guys like Emmanuel Hall and Deebo Samuel. And I like Antoine Wesley out of Texas Tech. And there's just guys all over. This draft is just littered with receivers who just have a lot of upside, and maybe taking a guy who might be a good number two, you don't want to spend a high draft pick on that.
Say Mohamed Sanu and number two, that's I think the ceiling. That's I don't even think that's what you should expect. I don't even project that for him right now. So we are going to end this episode here. Kunal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
We'll have to do it again.
Absolutely. I'm down.
All right. You can find this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review if you have not. That helps us out greatly. You can follow our work at Big Blue View. You can follow Big Blue View on Twitter at Big Blue View. You can follow Big Blue View on Instagram at @big_blue_view. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Pizzuti. You can follow Chris on Twitter at RaptorMKII. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.